Hi, it's Grace, and this is a special series of Frogmore Stew called Meal Prep. The politicians that run our state government are essentially the ingredients that make up the stew that is our state. And by getting to know each of the folks running for State House and State Senate, we hope to offer you a window into what we as the voters will determine the final recipe to be. Caitlin, TJ, and I took on the task of interviewing as many of the people running for those seats as we could. The interviews offer us a more personal look at the variety of people who want us to send them to Columbia. We learned a lot. We hope you do too.
I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep.
Today, we are talking to Tamika Isaac Devine, who is the incumbent in District 19 in the State Senate, which is Richland County. Tamika, welcome to Frogmore Stew.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to talk to you. You're running again for your same seat. And can you tell us a little bit about where your district is, what your district looks like?
Senate District 19 is the northern part of Richland County. And so it encompasses parts of downtown Columbia. It also goes all the way up to the Irmo area. So I've got parts of Irmo and Harbison. And then it also goes all the way up to Blythewood, really actually all the way up to the Fairfield County line. So it's a very large district, very diverse district. We have urban areas, suburban areas, and some rural areas in District 19.
And was your district affected at all? From memory, I don't think it was after the redistricting during the census.
It was slightly. I think all of the districts were redrawn a little bit, but for the most part, Senate District 19 is pretty intact. So this will be the first election under the new lines. And so there were some districts that are more of a swing district during this campaign. District 19 is still pretty solidly Democrat. I do have a primary, but all conventional wisdom says who wins the Democratic primary will likely win the seat.
Having been in the Senate, you are definitely the minority between, it's 30 to 16, right? It is not a supermajority by one seat. And do you feel like you are banging your head against the wall every day? Are you pulling your hair out? Or do you feel like there have been things that you've been able to work on that your voice actually is heard and that you were able to move the needle?
Thank you so much for that question, because I think that a lot of people, when they hear about the numbers at the State House and they feel like, what difference does it make? How can you get anything done? There are some things that no matter what, we're probably going to be on the losing side. But I think it's definitely about the way you approach any situation. So just two quick examples. Number one, I've been able to work with particularly my sister senators across the aisle on issues that are important to us. We've also got a couple bills that affect DSS and DJJ that we've worked together on. A lot of issues like that, they're not partisan. We're able to work across party lines on doing things that are important. And particularly in my district that has some areas with very high poverty and high rates of crime, those are issues that are very important to the students that I represent. Second example is when you have issues like the permitless carry bill, there are some issues that no matter what, they're likely going to be decided along party lines. The way I approach those issues are, if I can make those bills less harmful, if that's possible, then I try and present amendments and try and work across the lines and explain and give real life examples out how this affects citizens to some of my colleagues on the other side.
And as you mentioned, you won in the special election in January. What do you think prepared you in your life? What on earth made you wake up one day and say, I think I should be a state senator in South Carolina?
Well, I served almost 20 years as a local elected official. I served on city council at large for 19 and a half years. I think that definitely prepared me for a life of public service. Understanding the gravity of the responsibility of our elected officials to not only listen to constituents, but be able to come up with real solutions. And the great thing about local elected office is we were nonpartisan. And so people don't care, you know, if you're Republican or Democrat regarding their taxes or trash collection or law enforcement and public safety. They just want to make sure you're getting things done. So I think that almost 20 years of experience really prepared me to work in a body that is highly partisan and you have to really look towards solutions. and built relationships. And then I think it also prepared me to be ready on day one to be at the well and arguing for issues that are important to the citizens that I represent. In addition to that, just I've always remained a very big public advocate. Even the years after I left city council, I remained very active in the community. I worked with Servant Connect and the Wiley Kennedy Center and several of the local nonprofits that are continuing to do the work in our community. People saw me as someone who rolls up her sleeves and gets to work, whether you're elected or not. And so I think that's really what prepared me as well, because it kept me really close to the issues that were important to the citizens I represent. When this seat came available, I was prepared to talk about the issues, and I was very familiar with what was being done, what was not being done. You get some candidates who say, I'm learning about this, or I just learned about that. I don't have to say that. I've been working in the community all my life, and so I'm very familiar with the community leaders, with the issues, and what's currently being done.
Plus, I think there's a great value of understanding from a true city level what can and can't be done with or without the help of the legislature. That sounds like very valuable experience.
Definitely. And I think from the local standpoint, you also, and I think the perspective that I give is unique, because there are a few of us up there that have local experience, but not many. And I think what local experience gives me at the state house level is definitely, yeah, understanding the impact of our laws on the state level. So I mentioned the permit was carried bill, which even since it's been signed into law by the governor, there's been another bill to amend it already because they see some of the effects that this legislation is really having. Well, on a local level, I know I was on city council when we were having to implement ShotSpotter to detect gun violence in our communities. And I see from law enforcement perspective, the difficulties they have with illegal guns and that kind of thing. When we were at that debate, I was able to bring a very local, granular perspective because of my experience.
I love Sheriff Lott. He was on our podcast a couple of weeks ago. He's awesome.
He is wonderful. I have Sheriff Lott and then our police chief, Skip Holbrook. The two of them are on speed dial, and I text them probably two or three times a week.
My colleague, Caitlin Brewer, interviewed him, and it was frustrating. He said it on the podcast that he's an expert. He testified, and the experts aren't really being heard in the laws that are being passed.
I would add to that, Grace. I love that he said that, and I hope that your listeners hear that as well, is that our government needs to work for us, and there's no way that you can be an expert on all issues. And so it is important for us as lawmakers to listen to the experts in particular fields and hear from them. The permit was carried. It was really difficult. And even some other bills that are probably coming up, that when you have law enforcement telling you one thing, you say you support law enforcement, but you go totally against what they tell you they need and just do something because it checks the box on the agenda that you set at the beginning of the year. We have the same with the transgender bill. We have medical professionals who are telling you this is medically necessary procedures or treatment, and you are going to ignore that because it doesn't fit what you believe is a societal norm or should be a societal norm. And so it's just disheartening sometimes, because I tell people all the time, I am not an expert. I go to our law enforcement. I go to our medical professionals. I go to our teachers. And because I want to hear how this legislation can affect what you do every single day. And I think that we need to have lawmakers who make that a priority.
Yeah. We just had Dr. Elizabeth Mack on last week, and same thing through the abortion law. So in your district specific, is there one issue that stands out to you that is the biggest thing that you think needs to be addressed?
That's always a hard question because there's several.
There are so many.
But I want to say that really rises to the level in my district is the gun violence, particularly gun violence involving young people. And so I mentioned ShotSpotter technology. That is something that has been implemented in my district, and a lot of other areas are starting to do that. But that's how bad the gun violence issue is, that you need technology so that law enforcement has some real-time data as to when gunshots are happening, where they're coming from, et cetera. From the state house perspective, supporting our local law enforcement, making sure they have the tools necessary to combat these things, but also just looking at the issue in a comprehensive manner and think about how do we support education so that young people are understanding guns are dangerous and don't get involved, and how do we support the youth programs that help get teens in jobs so that they're not out there hanging out and joining gangs. I think that from my perspective, that one issue, it can be addressed in so many ways at the state level. Yeah. And so I'm trying to be open to that.
Do you think that there is one issue statewide that isn't being addressed that should be addressed?
Definitely education. I think education in the state still needs a lot of attention. We did do some good things this year. We amended the Read to Succeed Act that's been in place, I think, maybe 20 years now. We also addressed testing, which is something that you hear from a lot of teachers on the having to teach the test, and they really can't address what they really need to. I think those are things that we're trying to address, but I think we still have to address, number one, funding for our schools. We have to address support for our teachers, social emotional learning for kids, social workers, and mental health professionals for young people. So there's a lot of things I think that are not really being addressed. That people think education, you're thinking back in the old school, what is it? Reading,
writing, and arithmetic.
Education is so much bigger than that. And we're missing the boat because we're not really looking at education in a comprehensive way.
And that all relates back to gun violence for youth as well. Like the school and social emotional learning and all of that is directly tied to gun violence. Okay, if you had a magic wand, is there one policy that you could go into the Senate tomorrow and change immediately?
And I know a lot of people put a lot of attention on reproductive freedom, and there's other issues that are important. But I would say if I had to pick one, I would say that just because of the fact that we have so many counties that are OBGYN deserts, I personally am a mom who has lost a child during childbirth. Through my experience, I've been in support groups and other groups with other women who've had several issues as far as their reproductive health. And I think that our state has been tunnel vision on, quote, abortion, that they don't look at reproductive health in a holistic way. And I think that the laws that we've enacted, particularly the 6-week ban, really put lives of moms and children in jeopardy. And if I had a wand, I would probably say I would address that one, because I think that hits so many other things. But if I could be broader in that, it would be healthcare in general. Our state and right now the Senate is actually looking at a comprehensive study group on healthcare in the state, which would include the potential of expanding Medicaid. And I really hope that we take that seriously and look at that, because I think that healthcare in the state is woefully inadequate. And if we could address healthcare in our state, we would hit so many other issues like poverty and education and everything else.
If there was one thing that the voters would think was cool about you, what would your college roommates say about you? Or what would your best friend, what would she be like, oh, this is one funny thing about Tamika?
Probably that I think that I sing like Whitney Houston in the shower, but nowhere else. So I love music, and I love, especially love live music. So anywhere there's live music, I like to go. But it's so funny. I will sit there and be singing and acting like I really can sing, and I really can.
I feel like I'm the same. I'm Whitney Houston in the shower too, but I would never sing anywhere else because I'm not. I have no. Oh, goodness. Okay. One of the last questions before we go to the lightning round. So from an infrastructure standpoint, how do you see the roads getting fixed, the sewers, the water issues, the flooding, like all of these major things that are happening? Do you feel like at the legislature, we are focused enough on ensuring that the people that live in the state can drive on roads, have clean water, that the flooding is being addressed, like all of those things that are really imperative right now?
I would actually say that I am very hopeful, and I'm pleased with the attention since I've been in the Senate on infrastructure issues. In this current year's budget, that of course we need to work out some differences with the House, but hopefully once it passes, it will invest a lot of money on infrastructure issues, roads, bridges, et cetera. You might recall it was just a few years ago where the gas tax was raised and that money goes into infrastructure. So we're now really starting to see that money really become real money where we can see a difference. We are spending money and we are prioritizing infrastructure repairs and improvements that are long overdue, especially our bridges that a lot of them have a lot of issues. But South Carolina is the fastest growing state in the nation. And so I think that we need to start looking at our infrastructure in a way that is multimodal. Investment in bike lanes and pedestrian friendly stuff, looking at alternate transportation modes. I've been talking with FCDOT, and apparently a few years ago, they were in conversations about the high-speed rail that's bypassing us, but it's going to go like from Charlotte to Atlanta. And years ago, we talked about how do we get South Carolina to the table there. And there was some conversations on including Greenville, but what about Columbia? We are the capital. And when you talk about I-20, it goes straight to Atlanta. There is a lot of infrastructure already in place that we can just partner in to do that. Yeah, so how do we look at overall our transportation and infrastructure needs in a forward-thinking way as we plan for that growth and development so that it's not a strain on our infrastructure, but that we are prepared to meet people's needs and not just through cars.
Let's dive into the lightning round. Basically, the way this works is it's where you stand on these hot button issues, with number one being that you disagree with either current legislation in place or that's being proposed, and 10 is that you fully agree with the current legislation in place or proposed. Okay, so the heartbeat bill, 6-week abortion ban.
Oh, one.
School vouchers for all.
One.
Open carry, constitutional carry.
One.
Transgender care banned for minors.
One.
I'm going to use the term critical race theory because that is what a lot of people have used about this, but diversity, equity, inclusion, the critical race theory bill that was passed a year or two ago, limiting what teachers can teach.
One.
And then how judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
I'll say four to five, but let me qualify that as the Senate. We do have a bill that's gone over to the House that changes it, and I'm okay with some of the changes. I think we need to change the way they're currently done, but I don't think we need to go to popular elections, which some people have suggested.
Got it. And then lawyer legislators on the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
Yeah, I don't know about a two or three. I think you have to have the right lawyer legislator. I think you have to have lawyer legislators who understand the judicial process. They know who they're selecting, but I certainly don't think you should have lawyer legislators who abuse that or who appear in front of these judges regularly and get preferential treatment.
Last question, term limits for state House and state Senate.
I'm a one. I think term limits should be, but I think we do have term limits. I think it's the voters. I think if the voters are engaged and you're doing a good job, then they're going to send you back. If you're not doing a good job, they're not.
I cannot thank you enough. It was so great to talk to you, Tamika. I look forward to having you on again. Today, we are here with Zoe Warren, a Republican running in the Columbia Senate District 23. Zoe, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well and I'm getting better. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Can you tell us about the district? Is it more rural? Is it urban? What does your district look like?
We are outside of the Columbia city proper by quite some distance, but we have lots of suburbs and we have lots of rural areas.
Do you feel like there's one issue that's facing your district that is top priority for you?
The number one thing facing our district that everybody wants done is the roads to be fixed. Services that you pay for, you expect them to get done, right? Like, I have my own personal agenda issue that I would like to tackle, but for the people that I would represent in this district right now, over and over again, I keep hearing the roads.
And do you feel like from a statewide perspective, there's one issue that you would address on day one as a senator?
To be perfectly honest with you, our state is very diverse. And so I would argue that the number one issue, in my opinion, concerning the state is judicial reform. But that, I don't think everybody else would agree with that. But I do believe that for me, when I look at as a state, judicial reform is way up high on that list, if not the top of the list.
Do you mean when you say that how judges are chosen through the JMSC and lawyer legislators on that Judicial Merit Selection Committee, or is there another issue that you're focused on?
There's that, and I would agree with that, and I'll take it. But there's other things too. The issue with immunity for prosecutorial misconduct. There is a lack of just due process in some cases. Mm-hmm. I've seen situations where, for instance, a woman had a civil court case that ended up being put on her NCIC. It wasn't a criminal case. Mm-hmm. But somehow, through the judges, she became what they would consider a fugitive from justice who was violent and she needed to be extradited. There's lots of things similar to that. And so I guess you could even call it justice reform.
Why do you feel like that's not a glaring issue with most people in the state? Do you think it's like too much in the weeds as far as the language of what we use in the judicial process?
Somewhat. I also think that the people who get harmed run as hard as they can because they are harmed. And it's never ending. If the government does something wrong to you, then they will spare no expenses covering up what they did wrong.
And you were saying your district is like a very suburban and some rural. Do you feel like the job situation in your district is sufficient? Or do you feel like one of your jobs as a state senator would be to attract more gray and white collar jobs, manufacturing jobs into your district?
That would be nice. That sounds great. I don't know that would be like my job to do. I don't necessarily believe that's government's job specifically, although I want to create an environment where businesses want to come. I'm a conservative. And so if I can reduce their tax liability in such a way that it attracts them to come and plant their roots here, then I'm in. I do want to incentivize business. I mean, right now, our state has overtaxed and overspent to the tune of $25.5 billion, according to the Americans for Tax Reform. So businesses aren't going to come to a place where they're overtaxed. We cannot prosper as small businesses when we're overtaxed, even as individuals. That's a lot of money we could have spent on our families. However, instead of that, it's essentially paying for six-figure bureaucrats. And I'm really interested in trying to fix that. So if that, my fixing that, and creates an environment for businesses to come and hire our people, and that's great. But as a legislator, my job is going to be to lower the taxes. That way there's an environment for them to come. I mean, if I can make it financially prosperous, then it won't just be manufacturing companies and big businesses that decide to come here. Small businesses will prosper too.
And so your District 23 it's a pretty solid Republican district. And Katrina Sheely has held the seat since, I think, 2012. What's your reason for jumping into the race?
I was asked to run. My job, primary job, is a mechanic of government. My job has been to teach people what our government is. And I was training Republicans, conservatives, people that I believe will preserve our republic, who don't want to collapse it, how we can help our electeds. How can we write resolutions, help them craft bills, help them just have talking points to understand how they can refute garbage bills? Because you know what? Our electeds, they get elected, but they don't know what they're doing oftentimes. They just get some governance training from the associations. So there's not really a robust teaching model for electeds to get the ability to do governing. And so my job was to help our party begin to do that, to be that in Lexington, to be that across the state for that matter. And so that, but while doing that, I was asked to run as lieutenant governor with a guy named Harrison Musselwhite from Greenville. And then I was asked to run for the chair of the state party. And then I was asked here now just to run for this seat. I don't really have any interest in drinking martinis with people in khakis. I do have an interest in preserving the boundaries of our republic.
And so back to the question of why you're primarying Katrina Sheely. Is it strictly because someone asked you to, or is there a reason that you felt like it's time for new leadership?
Like, I don't really want to make it a habit of going around bad-mouthing other Republicans. However, I can say that the mission of the South Carolina Republican Party is to promote the platform and elect candidates that will support it, not candidates that will thumb their nose at it and lobby against it from the floor of the legislature or just completely disregard it and marginalize and mock those who uphold it.
Are you referring to her stand on abortion?
That's one of many, but yes, especially that. But I mean, there's massive regulatory things that have taken place. There are bills that get passed that I don't even know if they're reading them, or maybe they are, maybe they're not.
as much as I wish I could sit and talk to you all day long, I got to go to our lightning round. So the way that this works is where you stand on these hot button issues from 1 to 10. So 1 is you disagree and 10 is you fully agree with either the current legislation or proposed legislation. All right. Medical marijuana.
10.
Term limits for state house and state senate.
2. And okay. Two sentences to explain that. I want petition and recall power over every bureaucrat appointed in South Carolina first. And if they oppress us, then we can petition the people and put them out of work and then send our electeds back to the drawing board to get a new bureaucrat.
School vouchers for all.
3. I like the idea of a non-refundable tax credit for parents who are actually paying for their children's school. Why would they need to pay for education twice? They got to pay for their own kid's school and somebody else's. They should be able to reduce their tax liability. So I do believe in helping parents, especially if they're paying for their child's education, to be able to do that. I just don't like the idea of making everything public, because the moment that you fund something, it becomes public and the public has access to determine what you're supposed to do with it. And then even after the fact, to force you in an audit to demonstrate what you did. I think that's a way to decay homeschooling, which is parent-led, parent-funded, mostly at home.
The constitutional carry.
Oh, 10. And to qualify it, I think that this particular bill sucks in some ways because I don't want SLED being the administrator of these classes. We should have been incentivizing the private ranges and private trainers and incentivizing the people. Like, we should have a non-refundable tax credit again. Reduce your tax liability if you'll get trained twice a year. It doesn't have to be under threat. Doesn't have to be force and intimidation. And I especially don't like the idea that if I carry what they call a military weapon, if I don't have a CWP, I might go to jail for 3 years. It's not really constitutional carry, but I am a 100% proponent of true constitutional carry.
The heartbeat bill, 6-week abortion ban.
10, although I don't think it's far enough.
And the last one is the legislation passed that limits diversity, equity, and inclusion, social emotional learning in schools.
10. My family's mixed. My wife is different race. My children are mixed. I think teaching my children that a part of them is privileged and needs to, like, essentially give more points to these other people, like we're bowling and you need to be handicapped, I think that's unhealthy. I don't think it's necessary.
Today, we are here with Yokima Cureton, running for Senate District 27. Yokima, welcome to Frogmore Stew.
Thank you for having me, and thank you. You got my name exactly right. I love that.
So, Yokima, tell us a little bit about the district that you're looking to represent.
Sure. I am looking to represent District 27. It includes Lancaster County, it includes Kershaw County, and it includes Chesterfield County.
And what is the vibe in the district right now? What do you think the biggest issue is that your district is facing?
I think our biggest issue is leadership. I think leadership has lost the people's trust. Mm-hmm. I think it's lost the ability to keep first things first. Mm. While it is a race, it is not about politics. It is about people. And elected leaders have a commitment to add value to people. The goal of civic government is to maintain a safe, a just and compassionately responsible environment for freedom to flourish. And in my district specifically, we just have some challenges.
Mm-hmm. So you're in a really interesting district because you have an incumbent who it has served one term, Penry Gustafson, and she's being primaried by someone in her party. And my guess is that that's because of her stance in voting with the sister senators on the 6-week abortion ban. And then you're running as the Democrat in the district. So there are going to be some interesting pushes and pulls in this race, do you think?
Absolutely. I think that her decision to vote with the sister senators, I think that did make complete sense. I think Bob Marley once said that the problem is that people are being hated for keeping it real and are being loved for being fake.
I love a politician that quotes Bob Marley.
Ooh, and please don't call me a politician. I'm going to be super transparent. I am so not into politics. I can think of 1,000 other things that I can be doing right now. I can be spending time with my amazing husband. I can be spending time with my incredible grandbabies. I'm not doing this because I want to. I'm doing this because I have to. I've just looked at the trajectory that we've been on, and it's not been pleasant to watch.
And what do you think has prepared you for this job to start legislating on day one?
I'd say that as a businesswoman who's traversed various industries and experienced firsthand the challenges faced by individuals and families from diverse backgrounds, I've dedicated myself to understanding the intricacies of policymaking, community engagement. My background in marketing communications has honed my ability to communicate effectively with different stakeholders. And it's just taught me the importance of fiscal responsibility and innovative problem solving. And I've engaged with community leaders. I've attended policy forums, immersed myself in understanding the needs of the people in my district. And I believe this holistic approach has equipped me with the skills and the perspective needed. The other thing I'll say is because I am not a long-term politician, I can bring a better perspective because I think that when you're on the inside long-term, you get ego, you get emotions all tied up. And so what we need is some objectivity and broader views and fresh perspective.
And that seat, she only won in 2020, 51-49. She beat Democrat right. Vincent Shaheen. So do you feel like there's a little bit of a swell to push that small percentage of voters away from Penry and into your camp, or Penry or Alan Blackman, who's primarying her?
Absolutely. I feel like people want change. They want someone who understands where they've been, where they are, someone who can resonate with them.
What do you think the primary issue in your district is as compared to what you think the primary issue is for the state?
Specifically in my district, 27, it's the economy, education, because two of the three counties are under fiscal watch of the state in terms of how they're spending their funds, how they're dispersing their funds. And so that's an issue whenever we are trying to make sure that our kids have the best access to high quality education, and we have bad players, bad apples in those educational districts. And I think that's echoed statewide, along with the need for economic development, paying livable wages that uplift all communities and ensure job security.
We've done a lot to attract the manufacturing sector. Do you feel like we've done enough to attract the gray and white collar jobs in the state as well?
I think we've done a wonderful job attracting the manufacturing jobs to specific areas in the state, but not broadly. I think we definitely have to spend some time and effort attracting those gray and white collar jobs to ensure a diversified and resilient economy, because by fostering in an environment that supports innovation, skill development across the sectors, we can really create opportunities for all members of the community to thrive. We want to create an even playing field.
I hate to do this, but we're running out of time, Yokima. Can we dive into the lightning round?
Yes.
Essentially what this is, one is you disagree and 10 is you fully agree with either proposed legislation or current legislation. So let's start with term limits for state House and state Senate.
52. Yes.
Okay, 10. You agree. This is a combination question, but it's based on the legislation that was passed that limits what teachers are able to teach. So I'm going to term it the diversity, equity, inclusion, critical race theory, social emotional learning in schools.
One.
School vouchers for all.
One.
Constitutional carry.
One.
Medical marijuana.
Five.
Lawyer legislators on the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
One.
The heartbeat bill, 6-week abortion ban.
One.
Okay.
I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep.
Frogmore Stew Meal Prep is a podcast series presented to help you be a more informed voter for South Carolina. We encourage you to verify your voter information and see a sample ballot for your district online at scvotes.gov. Frogmore Stew Meal Prep is hosted by Grace Cowan and Caitlin Brewer, with editing and IT support by Eric Johnson, produced by TJ Phillips for the Podcast Solutions Network.